imagine you're going to a Ren Fair. You know, for those of you who don't know what a Ren Fair is, it's basically a medieval recreation of like a town in Renaissance era Europe somewhere, where you've got, you know, turkey legs and knights and dresses and tall pointy hats sometimes, and jousting and sword fights and grog, mead. It's like you've stepped back in time. And there's like a little bit of cognitive dissonance, because obviously there's like people that have cell phones even though they're not supposed to. And it doesn't smell like feces the whole time. So it's like you don't really get that true Renaissance era feel, but it's as close as you want, I would say. Part of the big fun of going to a Ren Fair or like a Disneyland or anywhere that is trying to give you a heightened sense of fantasy mixed with reality is you want the people who are playing their parts and the people putting on the whole affair to care about their parts, to really put their heart and soul into it, so that you, the, for lack of a better word, viewer or experience goer, can feel like they are just being absorbed into this world. And even though you're not participating in it fully, you're at least part of it. What A Castle for Christmas feels like to me is you're going to a Ren Fair for Christmas movies, but the people putting it on just don't quite care enough about it. It's like they're all just getting a paycheck and they're wearing, you know, the garb, but for the most part, like, people are eating Big Macs, or, you know, you see a knight, but he's talking on his cell phone and arguing with, like, his landlord about, you know, not wanting to get evicted. Or there's, like, you know, a princess turns around and is, like, waving to somebody and says, "Yeah, don't drive away, I'll be right there." And it's like, no, that's not period appropriate. What this movie feels like is that, kind of, where, except that there's one knight there who's taking everything as seriously as you want, and you're like, yes, Cary Elwes, you're my knight in shining armor at this Ren Fair. And I'm really glad that you and, like, maybe your retinue are taking this seriously, so at least there's some people here who are doing this right. Anyway, this is such a weird intro, but this movie is like a Ren Fair to me that is diluted and uninteresting, and I really wanted to go to the Ren Fair, and I really wanted to have a good time, and I like Ren Fair, but I don't want to spend time out of my day with my family and my kid going somewhere for an experience if it's not going to be worth my time. And I don't think this movie is worth your time. I think there's part of it that could be, but it really needed to try harder. It looks great, though. It's like this Ren Fair had armorsmiths that were just spot on. So, I don't know. You'll hear us talk about it. Merry Christmas season. Ho, ho, ho.
Welcome, everybody, to A Gentleman's Guide to Rom-Coms. I'm your favorite and most precious host, Ryan Graves.
And I'm that host that you kind of tolerate, Kelly Song.
Kelly, I more than tolerate you. I put up with you.
You extra tolerate me.
Yeah. You're like, I'm like lactose intolerant, but you, I'm always tolerant.
What? So You can stand me as long as you
like,
take a
pill.
Like,
I don't need to take any special pills.
Oh, you
to
don't
have
need
you.
To.
No, because
oh,
you're okay. Not a pill. I extra tolerate you.
I'm not a pill.
No.
Well, that's great. You know who is a pill?
Your daughter.
Characters like, in this movie that we're here to. No, my daughter's not a pill. She's kind of poopy. How's your kid?
He used being a pill.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, stop being a pill. And he's like, ugh.
I saw a video of him laughing the other day. Is that like
with his grandmother?
Is that like
not
4%? 4% laughter, 96% pill.
96% just terror. He's almost 2, and it's terrible.
Terrible twos. That's why they call them that. I always thought it was just no. There's no really other way to look at it.
It's just terrible.
Ask me how my daughter's doing.
How she's dooting?
Yeah.
Is she dooting well? Is she
tooting? She's tooting and dooting. She's getting better and better every day.
Like a Beatles song.
Yeah, I got to admit it. She is sleeping better. She's not as fussy 24/7. She's smiling. There's just like, there's some humanity there.
Is she laughing?
She's laughing.
Was she laughing last night at the movie?
You know, I put her on my lap at one point in time, and like she just looked up at the movie and she's like, "Oh, lights, cool." And there was one point in time where she like looked at Robin and then made this face like, "Huh?" And she's like, "I know, baby."
A really strange thing happened. There's an ornament on the tree, and my mom brought this ornament over, and it's a picture of me.
Oh, on your tree?
Yeah,
on my tree. Not in the movie.
New.
Okay.
It's a picture of me as a child, and I pointed to it holding Theo, and I was like, "Who's that?" And he's like, "Dada."
What?
I'm like, whoa.
He's a really good. I saw him do that the other day with Sarah's picture.
Yeah.
Where he said mama.
Yeah. It's weird. It's freaky. He can speak.
Yeah, like, are you afraid of him a little bit? Like, you see those memes where it's like, you know, there's a very, very, very slim chance that your child could kill you,
mm-hmm.
but not zero.
His skill set is increasing. He was in his crib last night and he was freaking out. He wanted to get out. And he did that thing where, you know how you try and get over a gate by like yeeting over it? Like you're like,
yeah.
Uh-huh. Like he as a baby almost flipped himself over. And remember that part in Avengers 2 when Thor is watching Captain America pull up on Mjolnir and it like nudges and he's like, ugh, like that nervous, like, oh my God, can they do this?
Uh-huh.
He didn't get over it. He didn't pick up the hammer. And my son didn't get over the ledge of the crib, so it was okay. But it was definitely a Thor nervous moment.
Are you talking Avengers Endgame?
No, in the second one.
Oh, when they're at the party.
We're at the party, yeah. And you know, Steve's like, watch me.
So you got to turn that thing into a bed soon, right?
Thor's hammer? Yeah, we can do that.
No, that'd be uncomfortable. No, you basically transition from full crib to like part crib to...
Yeah,
right?
Apparently my brother-in-law, Eugene, who you know...
I know.
And you're good friends with.
I know you, Gene.
Apparently, as he tells me, as he was a young child, he had to be moved to a just mattress on floor because he was so much the climber that they had to do that.
Oh, I
so.
Love it. I feel like Theo's right there. He's too tall, too heavy, he's basically a five-year-old, but in a two-year-old's body right now.
Yeah, so audience, that's what I'm going through. And I kind of envy you for the moment because mm-hmm. you're just dealing with a baby that doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah. She's pretty chill right now. The whole like waking up every 3 hours thing, we're like, hey, sleep.
Go sleep.
Do it. But she won't.
It'll always be like that.
So, Ryan, we're here to talk about A Castle for Christmas, which we were really excited about last week.
I thought it was A Christmas for a Castle.
No, A Castle for Christmas.
Oh, okay. Which one's A Christmas for a Castle?
I mean, it's on Hallmark. I mean, it's there. You know it's there.
Yeah.
It's like, we'll call this Rural Miracle on 34th Street. Where if you can think of it, there's probably a plot and or a title for a Christmas movie at this point.
Well, then there's A Valet for Valentine's Day. I'm trying to think of other alliterative, like this is a series, right?
Yeah.
A Valet for Valentine's Day.
A Pitcher for St. Patty's.
Yep. Pitcher for Patty's. What else we got? Those are the only holidays.
Fart for 4th of July.
Yep, a fart,
you know,
because
loud
of
noises.
July. That's right. Mm-hmm.
One more.
Okay, how about a thank you for Thanksgiving? No, that's too literal.
Do it again. Go again.
Beep. A Hank for Thanksgiving. No.
We already do those.
Yeah. We already do those.
Want, you bring it home.
A
Ryan, we get paid way too much money every episode to let the audience down now.
A meme for Memorial Day.
Okay. It's about a young, hip woman who's working at a local Facebook store. And and she hates Memorial Day, but she's been tasked to write the world's best meme.
Thanks, Hallmark.
So before we get into the story of this movie, I want to kind of preload the audience with it's expectations because mm-hmm. we've watched quite a few rom-coms from Netflix now.
Yeah.
And there's one rom-com in particular, and I wonder if you can think about it, that we have watched for this podcast
uh-huh.
that is almost the exact same plot as this movie.
For this one, well, the problem is it's so derivative of a lot of other movies too.
Sure. But this is a Netflix specific rom-com.
Okay, so let's go through it. There's Falling in Love.
That's the one.
Falling in Love, that's basically.
So I have a list of things that are similar between these two films.
Okay.
I just want you to say true or false afterwards.
Yeah.
Okay. An annoying American goes to a foreign country to buy a building that's a fixer-upper.
Right.
Okay. There is a community of oddballs that love her instantly.
Ding, ching.
One of which is a single gay couple, even though we only get half of that in this one.
Ding, ching.
He's a grumpy loner who fixes things.
Ding, ching.
You have a Jeep ride through the country.
Ding, ching.
In the in the Australian one, or New Zealand one, there's a bunch of sheep that they, have to worry about. And in this one, there's a bunch of cows.
Mm. Rush hour.
Instead of a goat that pops up in weird places in the house, there is a...
dog.
Mm-hmm. She stays in a drafty old place, which she fixes up with friends.
Ching.
There's an awkward almost kiss.
Oh, ding, ching.
In this one, she decides to smell him.
No, that was... well, and a hug. It's both.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that...
it was not like she sniffed him like a dog and ran away.
She kind of does it first.
Yeah.
She smells him and then hugs him. Like, she's like, might as well commit. Brooke, what are you doing? Very on the nose music.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily a plot point. Is she going to stay? And then, basically, Scotland, a tourism movie.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to get those out of the way so that we could not harp on it as much later on. But let's actually get into the story rather than all these little plot beats.
Tell me a story, Turk.
Let me tell you a story about love, D'Artagnan.
I ask you about love, probably quote me a sonnet.
I'm not much more than an interpreter, and not very good at telling stories.
That's the end.
What do you mean, that's the end? That's not. It's the beginning of something interesting.
Listen, that's the end of that saga.
The end.
Can I just give you one more comparison?
Oh, yeah, as many as you want, actually.
It's not to Falling in Love, but I was just thinking, we have a grumpy yet very handsome, very ancestrally wealthy, but not actually wealthy, but rich in ancestry richness, who is a humble landlord to his tenants, and he treats them good, but that is not known. His good qualities are not known until later in the story. Up front, we know that he is a... impatient.
This is Cary Elwes.
Gruff, yeah, and the impatient Duke. And gruff man who treats our heroine with a certain grumpy and haughtiness.
Yeah, kind of. But he's kind
just
of also really
it.
Nice. Yeah, yeah, go, yeah, yeah.
But who does that remind you of? Of a
you? Oh. a movie we've seen?
No, just of a classic literary character who is...
Oh, Mr. Darcy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Darcy.
Yeah, and if he were actually rich, then he would just be full Darcy. But he's actually kind of poor now.
Yeah, he is a poor man. But we don't start off with Mr. Cary Elwes. We start off with Brooke Shields, a.k.a. Sophie Brown, a.k.a.
the most famous author in the world.
Where she walks down the street, you would know her instantly. She's basically the J.K. Rowling of...
more. Yeah, she's more famous than
where,
her.
Where no matter where she goes, people will see her and recognize her. So much so that she's just released her 10th book and she killed off a character which has received so much anger from her adoring non-fans anymore. Public. Mm-hmm. Where... they will protest her.
Yes. How dare she? Because you remember the great riots of 2004 when Gary Oldman died. Who's Gary Oldman?
Oh, Sirius Black.
When Sirius Black died.
Yeah, where all of the fans of these books stormed and raged and said, I'll never read another one and we'll burn these books because our character that we liked died. I mean, I get it. Like... in Game of Thrones, when, like, which is more popular, let's be honest, more popular than these books. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
She, like, you know, they kind of miffed the last season in a lot of people's eyes. And a lot of people were pissed off on social media, but it's like, nobody went and protested outside of like interviews or something. And the idea that this romance author who is seemingly very successful would have this happen to her afterwards is bazonkers.
Which it's just like, okay, I will suspend my disbelief for your fantasy story. That's fine. I'll go in. Because like, you know, in Castle, Richard Castle is like the most hot, famous crime writer. And it's like, have you met crime writers? Have you seen them? They don't look anything like Nathan Fillion.
They all have kind of longer hair.
And they're just grungy guys who you would find at a Marvel movie.
Yeah, they're exactly the kind of people you'd expect. They're not unlike us, except with more hair.
Right.
But she goes on the Drew Barrymore show, which doesn't exist, but I want to exist.
Yes, it does.
It exists. Drew Barrymore has her own show.
Yeah.
How did I not know about this?
I don't know. It's like, it's been like that's a go-to SNL sketch of like, let's make fun of the Drew Barrymore show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like one of their new actors, like that's her go-to impersonation these days is Drew Barrymore. So
I thought they made it. I liked it more when I thought they made it up for this movie.
That would have been fun. I feel like if they made up a talk show, would it be Drew Barrymore or who else could we have used?
Oh, yeah.
For like a made up one.
Like the, let's take a non like AAA plus list rom-com actor, but who's somebody else who could turn into a
talk
show?
I actually want hosted by is Kristen Bell.
Oh, yeah, that would be amazing.
And then Dax Shepard would show up every once in a while.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Who's her musical, like, who's the person playing music for her?
Will.i.am.
Yeah, yeah, he's just her, like, hype man.
Yeah.
And slash, like, he directs the band.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I would watch the crap out of that. And she has a sloth on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on.
So that's not what happens, though. And then, like, there's this whole thing where Drew Barrymore's like, I'm your friend. But then she, like, tears her a new one. And then Sophie Brown freaks out.
She has a
Tom Cruise style. I'm a normal human being who's having a hard moment or an odd moment on a talk show.
Which good for them for trying to show us that. But the problem is they directed the shot where she gets up from the chair and the cameraman knew that she was going to get up from her chair and have a rant. And it's like, if this was like spontaneous, the cameraman would be like, whoa, she's going nuts. But like the camera's like, all right, now we're gonna do an elegant fly out and like,
and slowly pan back. Yep. Come to this. Come on, Sophie, bring it.
I also really like how they do the lighting setups for when they're doing the camera phone stuff, because there's a lot of times when it's a camera phone superimposed on it. And it's like the lighting in these shots where it's just their iPhone shooting them, it's like the most elegantly lit shots in the universe.
This is the
You didn't have to try that hard. You could have just shot it on an iPhone. Like, you're a cheap Netflix movie. Why bother?
There's these moments where Sophie Brown will talk to somebody on FaceTime or whatever, and they superimpose over like a third of the screen the other side of the conversation on the phone. It's so distracting, and they like. They keep cutting away from it. They don't just leave it on for the conversation. They're like, okay, this is boring. She's not doing anything. Okay, we'll bring her back for when she's talking. And then we'll cut away from it.
Yeah, it was weird.
But so she decides to go to Scotland because her daughter's like, the reason why you wanted to write to begin with was because of Grandpa. And Grandpa was a storyteller. So go to Scotland and do a castle. She's like, I'm going to go to Scotland and do a castle.
Yeah, so she goes to Jarlsberg, Scotland.
What?
I don't know.
That's Germany.
What was the town called? I can't remember. Is the town called Dundunbar?
I don't know if it's called Dundunbar, but we'll say it's on the fiefdom of Dundunbar.
Yeah.
Best castle name, though. Can we say best castle name? Dundunbar.
Dundunbar. Where do you live?
Dundunbar.
Oh, thanks, woo-woo.
So, Dundunbar. She shows up there, and she meets all these people in a knitting circle.
They're like, hi, we're going to be the eccentric back characters and side characters for this movie.
Yeah, there's the leader, and she's just kind of the cool leader, and then there's the old lady, and then there's the baker, and then there's the guy whose husband died recently, and he hasn't talked since
then. I
thought
he was deaf.
No, but he just hasn't talked yet.
Right, but like at first he's like kind of signing. I'm like, wait, he's gay, deaf, and widowed. Like, you guys are really stacking it on. But it's no.
How can you not love him?
No, he's taking a vow of silence. And I'm like, oh, so is he going to have like a climactic time where he is going to finally utter something?
And That being said, like, as a character trait, I think it's a really cool one where it's like you have this silent character who hasn't talked since his husband's death. And I'm like, if Richard Curtis was directing this, this might be one of the greatest characters ever written.
Mm-hmm. But he's not.
But he's not. but I do love his name's Angus, and I do love his sweaters most of all in this movie.
Yeah.
So she hangs out with those people and they're like, you're our friend. Also, they're like, you're Sophie Brown.
We know you, internationally acclaimed author.
Sophie Brown.
In our wee village, dinner be daft.
Welcome to the village inn.
Thank you. I have a reservation under Sophie Brown.
Sophie Brown, the author?
Not sure I should admit it, but yes.
I've read all your books. I just finished the last one.
Sophie Brown, who's also, she's gone through recently a divorce, like a year ago, and her ex-husband is marrying somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Now, fellows, ladies, gentlemen, people of the world.
Children.
Lend me your ears. Cary Elwes says that in a movie. Can we talk about Chekhov's gun for a second?
Yeah.
Okay. So Anton Chekhov is this old playwright from Russia. And there's a rule written about a device where if you're going to introduce a gun in the first act of the play, it has to show up by the end. Somebody has to be killed by it.
It will be used.
It will be used. I guess nobody will necessarily be killed by it, but it will be used. So basically, we have Brooke Shields being Sophie Brown, this author who's having a horrible time. And then on the other side, we have Cary Elwes, this Duke who's having a hard time financially, right? And he's trying to, like, set up his castle as a place for people to have destination weddings or funerals or whatever. And there's this moment where he's like, ah, okay, we're going to book this wedding.
Right. Whatever happened to that wedding?
Can I tell you what this movie either missed out on or was planning on doing and just didn't have room for?
Uh-huh.
So not only was that happening, but there was also her ex-husband is getting married on Christmas Eve.
Right.
Right. And so this guy is like, oh yeah, we'll book this wedding for this castle.
Oh, man.
And then she's like, oh, my ex-husband's getting married and that's why her daughter can't come visit her for Christmas. Now, why the heck wasn't the wedding that he booked for the castle her ex-husband's wedding,
because
unbeknownst?
At the end of the movie, it could have been like, what are you doing? And he's like, oh no, we're all colliding with each other.
Yeah, that would have been perfect. Now,
they don't do that.
They don't do that. But like 3/4 of the way through this movie, a random couple that were shown for some reason shows up.
Who the hell were they?
And checks in, and we don't get the husband's name. We only get the last name of the woman he's with.
Dorothy.
Buongiorno.
May I help you?
Yes, yes. I would like a room for the night, please.
Okay. All we've got left is the Christmas romance package. Oh, champagne in the evening?
Really?
Breakfast in bed?
Hmm.
All the Netflix you can binge.
Thank you. We'll take that.
Yes, we will.
Very good. Can I take your name, please?
Donatelli.
Excellent.
Who looks strikingly like Brooke Shields. I think that they were the couple that was supposed to show up, and it just got left on the cutting room floor.
How can it be? It goes through so many versions, so many executives look at it, and none of them asked, why is this scene in here?
Okay, so now we let's get back to the story.
So she's like, oh, I'm a divorcee, but I also have to rescue my career.
So she's going to go write.
And she goes.
And she has this agent who's like breathing down her neck 24/7 like nobody would.
What's funny is everyone's pissed because she killed off this character. So her career is in the toilet.
Who she killed off because she's mad at her husband, apparently.
Right. Yeah. But the agent's like, hey, HarperCollins wants to offer you a 4-book deal. Why would HarperCollins offer a 4-book deal if her reputation is in the toilet and now has to rescue it? Wouldn't she be on the outs with her publisher?
Because reasons, but also her agent has probably been made so much money if she's as popular as they say she is.
Yeah, she should be like a billionaire J.K. Rowling at this point.
And so her agent should basically be like, hey, look, I get it. You're having a hard time. Take a break. For a second, like, let this die down and come back with a new book. But instead, her the agent's just like, you better write. You better fucking write out there. Give me another book.
Well, I get that pressure. I just don't get the demand for this new book that has to come out like tomorrow.
Right. Yeah. Like, I don't get it. But she meets Cary Elwes, who is an English actor with a pretty
good Scottish.
Robin didn't like it, but I was like, I'm fine with this accent.
Yeah. Sarah liked it too.
Yeah. He's fucking charming.
Well, it's so great because the first shot where it's like, oh, look, Wesley.
Oh, my sweet Wesley.
And he still looks it.
He's got Wesley hair. And I just wonder if he's going to wear a rug the rest of his life, because it's like the hair is, it looks like just like he uses the same exact hairstyle from The Princess Bride.
Maybe he just, like, biologically he just works it.
Yeah.
And he's just got that hair. Or also, he's a really rich actor. You can do anything you want to make yourself look any way you want, probably.
Yeah. So I really like their meet cute, because they run into each other while he's doing, like, maintenance at the inn. And
what happens is his dog jumps up at her and
like,
she falls.
Just nudges her with the littlest ounce of gravity.
But instead of her just, like, backing up to, like back up, she turns and falls into his arms.
Yeah.
And Kathy, Robin's sister, who's watching this with us, is like, that's how I always fall. I turn around and fall down.
As you wish.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, like a cat, because if you're falling down, it's like, fours. get your limbs out.
But he holds her, and they kind of like have a small thing for each other. Mm-hmm. But he seems like a janitor, a maintenance guy, a landscaper dude.
Mm-hmm.
A caretaker, I guess, is what you'd call him.
Yeah.
But he's really a duke.
Yeah. So then she goes on this tour of the castle, and we learn that she's going through the tour and she sees this Cary Elwes just doing more maintenance. And she's like, oh, you're just the kindly maintenance man of town.
Yeah. And he's like, I'll give you a tour,
he's
baby.
Like, sure.
As you wish.
So she goes on this tour. She goes into, she has memorized where she needs to go, and she goes to the very tippy top of the castle.
Right, after he gets distracted.
Yeah,
and
he's like, don't go up there. And she's like, I'm going
to
go up
He's like, don't
there.
Go to the west wing. There's like, a rose, don't touch it.
And she goes up there, and she finds an engraving on the door frame, and Cary Elwes finds her, and he's like, the hell you doing up here?
Which, fair enough.
Yeah.
And she's like, my grandpa was going to do this thing, but some landlord kicked him out and fired his dad, and so you should feel bad about it. And he's like, yeah, my grandpa was kind of a dick.
Yeah, and then Cary Elwes was like, you know, that's an endearing reason why you want to look up here. I can no longer trust you, and I'm going to be mad at you for the rest of this movie.
Here's the thing. I get... If she was more charming,
mm-hmm.
I would also call that into question, but... She's grating. Like, I can see, like, she's like, immediately what she does is run away.
Right.
And, like, sneak through his castle. And so, immediately, I'd be like, okay, what are you doing here? And she's like, well, this happened, and then also I'm going to insult you. And he's like, that's fine. But then...
Couldn't she have just asked and told him and explained the situation?
No, because she's...
Well, she didn't know that he's the owner of the castle.
And I like sneaking through castles, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, Harry Potter late nights, I getcha. But I don't know.
She couldn't do that for plot reasons.
For plot
because
reasons.
Because we're in a Netflix rom-com.
So basically, they walk out and they are kind of grating on each other more. And he's grumpy, but I think in a lovable way, personally. And then...
They now have this... Because
antagonism,
of this,
I guess.
Yeah, they now have a Elizabeth Darcy conflictedness towards one another.
And then she basically fast forward to we find out he's losing the castle.
And so he's losing the castle because of property taxes. Like he should own it outright. Like it's not like they bought it in 1952.
No,
they've owned it for hundreds of years.
You own the land, but if you own all the land all around and the castle,
mm-hmm.
like that's got to be so much money
yeah.
just to upkeep. And so if you don't have like a lorddom and fief being paid to you
yeah.
all the time, is fief something you can pay? Regardless.
Yeah.
But as soon as we find this out, she also shows up and she's like, I'm going to buy this castle because she's super rich,
well,
apparently.
The line is like, the castle is cheaper than a Range Rover. And it's like, shit, I'll buy it then.
No, he's not selling it for...
What did she say? She said something about a Range Rover. Something like he's selling it. He has to sell it for like dirt cheap because it's such a nightmare to maintain or something like that.
I think you could sell a castle for more.
You should sell it for more than a Range Rover.
Here's the offer.
it rather large.
But as I understand it, Sarah's explaining to me, it's like castles are so hard to maintain that they're actually really hard to sell off because no one wants to actually own it because you can't really afford to keep it up.
You got
to
move into a castle with like 10 of your friends.
Yeah. And so like the new Instagram thing for like the HGTV generation is like, how do us millennial couple like takes care of this castle? And like, that's the whole thing. And
I like that. I'd be on that show.
Yeah. And maybe that's what the movie should have been instead of this movie.
But she buys the castle and he doesn't want to sell it at first, but then he's like, okay, you give me enough money in escrow that will go for 90 days. And then if you decide to leave, like you can't get your money back. And so he thinks that this will float him for a while and he can get her out of the castle. But the qualification is he gets to keep living in the house during this time.
Yeah, but what's his, I still am kind of confused by his master plan. He's going to drive her away and she's going to like give up on the deal.
If she backs out, he gets to keep the money in escrow.
Oh, so he'll just have the house paid for.
Yeah.
And he keeps it.
But if that's the case, then like a deposit in escrow is not that much money. I think she's spending millions of dollars on this house.
Yeah, and like, if she's J.K. Rowling, you know, like she should be able to afford a castle because
it's a drop
J.K.
In a bucket.
Rowling
yeah.
also lives in a castle.
Yeah.
So does Enya.
Oh, I go to that castle. Do you think the hallways are always like...
She's like, those are my cats.
Do you think Enya and Bjork ever hang out?
Yes, and then Cher shows up and it gets weird.
Whoa. That's a party. I want to go to the first hour of and then leave before it gets crazy.
Yeah.
So thus begins like this thing where he puts her in a bad room and she's like, ugh, I hate this room, but I'm going to stick it out.
Because I'm stubborn.
And then he's basically slowly falls in love with her.
And she finds out that he's a kindly landlord and he's like, oh, I went to Cambridge and Oxford. I studied Greenpeace technology.
Yeah. And so he's like, if you're going to keep this up, you have to treat it well, which is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, oh, this is from Falling in Love.
Is this like a mandate on Netflix productions of like, you need to tout green technology?
I don't know, but it's not a bad thing for them to do. So
no, but it's just kind of weird.
I guess so. Okay. So,
Is there any other reason? There was something that made her rethink him. Is it just that they're like, oh, he's a really nice dude? And she's like, oh, I misjudged him.
Basically, all of her friends at the pub were like in the knitting group are like, he's everybody's landlord in this town because he owns all the land around here. Mm-hmm. And he's really, really nice.
Yeah. Basically. And she's like, oh, I misjudged you. So yeah. I'm going to fall in love with you now.
And so she felt like it's really hard to actually, like they go on a horsey ride and they cut a tree and then she learns to dance with him.
They find a shrine to one of the ancestors,
right.
And she was like a warrior princess.
And so she's going to base her next book off of this.
Yeah, like this Princess Mononoke lady.
Yeah.
The uh-huh. Scottish Princess Mononoke.
I'd watch the crap out of that movie.
Super cool.
And then they basically, at one point in time, she buys all the people at the in her knitting group. They're going to do this big party on Christmas because that used to be a tradition, right? And she buys all her friends' dresses and sweaters. And then she shows up in what I believe is his mom's old dress.
I found this. I thought maybe I could wear it tomorrow night. I mean, unless it belonged to your mother or your grandmother. Or
you shouldn't be wearing that.
Yeah, he was like, you shouldn't wear that. And I was like, it's either the mom's dress or his ex-wife's dress.
Right. Regardless, you macking him in his mom's or ex's dress?
Weird.
Weird.
But
Brooke Shields?
I mean, I'm going to hope that it's the exes and it's only going to give him fuel to rip that dress off.
Oh, I mean, maybe that was her whole deal. It's a cool dress.
It's a lovely dress.
I think it's a cool dress. Then
then more conflict.
Well, yeah. Like basically they sleep together and I turned to Kathy and Rob and I said 5 minutes before they break it off.
Yeah,
and it was almost exactly 5 minutes later.
Yeah, because she's like, hey, you know, you can still crash here. And he's like, I can still crash here? Screw you, lady. And he gets all upset. And then Brooke Shields is like, you're a monster. Forget it. The deal's off. It's like, what? You're giving up now? You've come so far, and he freaks out for 10 seconds, and you're giving in?
It's pretty
contrived. Sarah was so upset at her. She's like, Brooke, no. No, Brooke.
No, Brooke, no.
I can't. I can for only reasons that the script needed conflict can I understand why she did it.
I see her saying that to him. I get that it was a little bit of an overreaction for a human being, but I can see why it would upset him, right?
Yeah.
Logically, that makes sense.
He should be upset, but she has no reason to be triply upset at him for being upset.
I'll leave because you got mad about this.
Yeah. So then, and then Ewan, not Ewan, Carrie L was...
Good. Similar hair comp, though.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And Scottish, so I was close. Man, this movie could have been better if it had Ewan McGregor.
I don't know.
If it's Ewan McGregor falling in love with Carrie Elwes, I think
yes, it would.
Things.
Oh my God, this would be a better movie.
Hello there. Your move.
As you wish.
He's like, I'm an idiot. And then he like throws a snowball at her.
And then he's like, no, you're not an idiot.
And so then she's like, you know what? That was dumb being mad at you. It's like, yeah, goddamn right it was.
And then they show up at this party and her daughter shows up because Carrie Elwes got her daughter there.
Very lovely moment.
And then, but after that, basically what happens is they're like, we're going to have a Christmas party every year. Then it cuts to them having Christmas together.
And no party.
Like, and then it just goes out the window. There's no like real climax of this movie. It just ends.
And 10 minutes before the movie, we meet this mystery couple who checks in at the inn. And we're like, ooh. And they're like, their demeanor is like, hello.
Yeah.
We're here.
They're like Boris and Natasha. Yeah. Like they're like, these are our normal accents.
And we're like, ooh, uh-oh.
Who are you?
Is something bad going to happen? Like, are they paparazzi or are they like...
No, what they were was the husband, her ex-husband and the wife. I don't know who else it could have been.
Yeah. Maybe there was a rewrite and they're like, well, wait, we have all these scenes with the daughter here. How are we going to explain why the daughter's here? And maybe they like did a reshoot and Carrie Elwes is like, oh, I invited her. That's the reason why. And like they abandoned this
whole other plot.
Yeah.
That would have made the movie better.
I think
it would have at least added intrigue. Like there would have been real conflict.
Well, what's weird is the movie sets up that she's a divorcee and like she obviously was trying to deal with it by killing off this male character in her books
who
was the inspiration behind it.
Yeah.
And then she has this romance with, are we just demanding too much that they actually do some like thematic work here, that they set up this theme of Brooke Shields has trust issues and you know, she killed off this male character and she's meeting Carrie Elwes. I don't see her working through anything from this bad marriage.
Her character arc should be that she not only has these trust issues now, but she's feeling like she's feeling antagonistic and almost like violent towards men in general.
I really liked him watching the YouTube video where he's like,
yeah,
oh
and
my
then
God.
He locks his door.
That's
great.
A really good scene.
See, that's really good. And then like if at one point in time he saw her like sharpening a knife because she was going to prepare dinner, but didn't know why. And he just like slowly backs out of the room. That could have been funny.
Yeah.
But they were so uninterested in character development for her.
So it's just kind of like, maybe we're asking too much. Like maybe you're trying to be super low stakes and keep it really simple so that like 3-year-olds can enjoy this movie. Cause it like, it says TVG on it. I'm like, yeah, I guess so. There's like this weird, like alluded to sex scene, but otherwise,
but besides that,
it's a very appropriate film, much like the entire Hallmark genre. And it's just weird. Like Netflix is trying to like cramp on Hallmark style where it's like Hallmark's like, bro, like we've been doing this for decades. Like you can't just come in here and have a squeaky clean movie. No.
I'm just so disappointed in Netflix because they had all of the parts there.
Yeah.
Like, except Brooke Shields, but I will talk about that in a minute. Where you have at one point in time in this movie, you have a castle. You have Carrie Elwes walking backwards up a staircase explaining how a staircase is developed this way, so right-handed people would have advantage over left-hand, or like people coming from downstairs if they were defending the castle in a sword fight.
Oh, there's something I ought to tell you.
Tell me. I'm not left-handed either.
You have the guy who's known for one of the greatest sword fights of all time in cinema television explaining this.
And he just does a little...
Yeah, and he's gorgeous. And, like, the layout is gorgeous. And, like, the people of this town can be so interesting if you give them a chance. But I feel like I really wanted this to be a movie that I would come back to. And...
It's
I don't think I will.
It's a heartbreaking disappointment. Yeah. But I call this a shitty Netflix movie. Like, I feel like that's the genre, shitty Netflix movie.
Yeah.
At least it's the best of the shitty Netflix movies.
I like this. Do I like this more than Falling in Love?
I do. At least this one has Cary Elwes.
Yeah.
And, like, there's a lot more charming.
He's the shining star of it. But, like, I feel like I know the characters of, and there's more dynamicism to the characters in Falling in Love, like all the townsfolk.
I can't even, all I remember about the townsfolk was that the couple owned the coffee place, and then there was a guy who really likes rugby.
I remember there was the lady who owned the other inn who was like really wanting to take over her inn, and she was really antagonistic. And then there was her friend who was in love with the teacher, and she owns the garden shop.
Oh, yeah. So you have to jog my memory. Right. That's the problem,
But in 4 months, when I ask you about these characters,
I mean, you should bring it up at the next rom-com Oscars and be like, let's quiz each other. It's like, mention several characters from Falling in Love and just see how far we can get in terms of remembering who they are and what their deal is. Because I certainly liked the side characters in this, and it felt like they had more of a life and it wasn't as disappointing. Because there's a lot of setup in Falling in Love where it's the lady and the other guy who owns, like, basically the Jackson and Suki of that movie.
Yeah,
I think this movie delivered just a little bit more of setting them up. And
wait,
doing
what do you
something
mean?
With him. Well, you had the main inn, the lady who owned the inn, and then Cary Elwes is like assistant man, and they have back and forth, and they actually just kind of like put a button on their story where they go off and dance. It's like, okay, that's enough. That I know that they have a life.
Yeah, but I mean, it's less in this than it is in Falling in Love.
Yeah, I just think it's, I don't know.
I think
it's comparing rotten apples to rotten oranges.
Sure. Well. Okay, that's whoa. And then there's this weird after credits or during credit sequence where
the movie has a stroke.
Yeah, where it's kind of like they're doing Brooke Shields' next day or next time on
the Drew Barrymore
show, and they're like they're almost bloopers.
But they're not at all.
It's just Drew Barrymore and Brooke Shields talking, kind of.
And it's like, maybe this is behind the scenes of them
and then
getting
Drew
ready.
Drew Barrymore says, "Scotland."
Total fairy tale. You bought a castle in Scotland, moved to Ireland, Scotland.
It's a new province.
And it's just bizarre.
Okay.
All right.
That's the
movie.
It's a, well, let's, can you just tell me, like, on a scale of whatever to whatever, where this movie lands?
It's a movie that I would probably give like a 1.5 out of 5 stars to if Cary Elwes wasn't in it.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just such a shining, bright Christmas star that I'll give it a 2, I guess.
See, this movie, actually, I was like, watching
aesthetically, it's wonderful.
And I'm watching, you know, this is good enough for what it needs to be.
Sure.
If you're going to be a shitty Netflix movie, it's like if I'm putting on A Castle for Christmas and I'm not putting on all the other rom-coms that Netflix has, because they license, I don't know if Notting Hill's on there now, but they have movies like that. And it's like, if I'm skipping over all the actually Hollywood produced ones and I'm watching this, for whatever reason, maybe because there's a child in the room and I can't put on Notting Hill or Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Why couldn't you put on Notting Hill?
I don't know.
Okay, I hear what you're saying, though.
But you got to have a TVG thing on. Maybe your grandma's there. Who knows?
Sure, sure.
I'm just like, I guess you're accomplishing what you set out to accomplish. But then the third act happens and all the characters just don't make sense. It's just like, you guys can do better. Like, it's like you were drunk at the wheel when you had to do the third act. Because all the other stuff was charming. Like, they don't have chemistry, but I was at least kind of rooting for them. And I really liked that hug.
can I ask you? So I don't know. There's this trope that's like the American abroad is loved by all. And this is more a tourism thing than anything else. It's like, if you go here, we will love you.
Yeah.
But they are the least charming, least interesting person in the movie for the most part.
The American?
The American.
Yeah.
I just have to ask you, like, what you actually thought about Brooke Shields' performance in this.
Or why she was
cast.
Well, Brooke Shields, the only other thing I've seen her in is her guest spot on Friends, where she plays a crazy stalker lady. So I'm just like, yeah, this checks out.
but do you have any like,
I didn't think
critical
she was,
feelings?
I didn't think she was bad. I didn't think she was great. I thought she was fine, and I was just glad that Cary Elwes was here, because if they didn't have Cary Elwes and it was just generic Netflix actor, then this movie would just be down the toilet. But it's like, you know, you're bouncing off of Cary Elwes, and that's fine. That's good enough.
I hope Brooke doesn't listen to this, but I had such a bad time watching her.
Yeah, that's fine.
Like I thought it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'll say about it.
Do you have any constructive criticism for her?
Yeah, you want me to give
like if you're
advice
on the set and it's
no,
like, we're going to try that again this time.
It just, there was just something about the performance that felt, what it feels like to me is, do you ever eat, this is not constructive criticism. This is, we can cut this later if you want.
You ever have dairy?
No.
And realize you shouldn't.
Do you ever like take a bite of like, a cookie or just something soft and tasty, and then for some reason there's like a grain of sand that somehow got in the bite of whatever you're in, and then you bite it between your teeth. It felt like the way she was smiling, the way she was delivering her lines, the lack of interesting lines she was given to say, like all of it really made this movie worse for me. And I rarely feel that way about an actor. And so I'm sure she's done other wonderful things. I know that she's mainly known for being like a really famous model. Mm-hmm. But she's done acting as well. And I just, I would have really liked to have this movie cast with someone like Drew Barrymore or someone who could bring character to the role, because I really feel like there was such a lack of character to her character. It felt like I was watching one of the most basic people go.
You just hear Brooke Shields like, I'm sorry, my character lacks character, and I'm the one who's lazy.
I know. It's fair, Brooke, that doesn't exist. But I like you see this world that is Scotland in this cute little town and this Cary Elwes who's grumpy. And when you have a character like Brooke Shields' character being so flat and basic, and I'm not feeling like she's bringing anything interesting to that character at all, it really, I don't know, made the movie harder to watch for me. But we don't need to harp on this. So
the dog was cute.
Yeah, the dog was actually a really good actor.
And the dog was motivated, like falling in love. It's like, oh, go!
This goat's go. Here!
But this movie, it's like, it's his dog, but she's sleeping in her room. I like that little moment.
Yeah,
it's a good beat.
But she also like steals his dog, and I'm like, that's mean.
I think that's my assessment of the movie. Has way more enjoyable beats than Falling in Love, because Falling in Love, I was watching it with my jaw a little open, just like, why am I watching this?
Uh-huh.
Whereas Falling in Love, whereas this movie,
Castle
for Christmas, I'm just kind of like, okay,
sure.
I'm not horrified by this.
Sure. All right. Well, let's see if we can't find a horrifying trope to talk about next.
And we're back with trope talk. It's like Scott talk, but with less kilts.
Oh, nice. I did like the kilt that was on Cary Elwes' assistant,
mm-hmm.
who I also thought was a good actor in this movie.
Mm-hmm. See, he was fun.
He wore it well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me and Sarah wanted him to end up with the gay widower.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Wouldn't that have been nice?
Because
they
have
a
better
scene together where they're like, he's like, come, Wesley. Like, he's like, they have like this little buddy-buddy relationship for just a second there. I don't know what happened.
I think this movie had a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would have just rather watched a movie about, like, where Cary Elwes was the main character, and it was about this duke who was, like, at the end of his empire, and he had to figure out what to do with his castle, and he had his, what's Don Quixote's, like, buddy?
Pancho.
Pancho. It's Pancho. Pancha.
Pancha Villa? Something like
Pancha.
That? I, I think this movie, I think there is a way to enjoy this movie. It's to enjoy as background noise if you're in a room that feels too quiet and you're doing something else.
So this is what I should put my baby to sleep to
like,
at night.
Like when you get to the third act, you got to really unfocus your eyes at what you're looking at because it's like zoomed way out. Like if you're watching it from across the street, you would like be like, okay, and then this happens, and then this happens. That makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, that's Cary Elwes. I love him.
Yeah. And so it's like, I don't want to compare it to Falling in Love
unendingly. Yeah.
But nonetheless, there's so many moments in Falling in Love where it's like, you what? What the what? Whereas this, I'm just kind of like, yeah, that's the safe choice. That's the safe choice. It just hits all the paint-by-numbers mm-hmm. things. So anyways, the trope that we're talking about.
Yes.
The trope. Is
Americans Abroad. I'm afraid of America. Our alliteration game is just spot on uh-huh. these days.
You got an American in Paris. You've got From Russia with Love.
An American werewolf in London.
So I think the best example of this, which is a really interesting thing, is that all of the mainline Richard Curtis rom-coms
mm-hmm.
feature Americans abroad and mm-hmm. fall in love with their bumbling British protagonists.
Yep.
So you got Four Weddings and Funeral. You've got Carrie, played by Andy McDowell, falls in love with Hugh Grant.
You've got Notting Hill.
And it's Julia Roberts, a famous American, Anna Scott.
Anna Scott.
Great Scott. It's Anna Scott. No.
Oh, she's a Scott.
No, Anna Scott.
Yeah, but Hugh Grant's not a Scott.
He should be. Because he'd be like, that's crazy that you're Anna Scott and I'm a Scott. So, and we could have a Scotch egg for breakfast.
Oh, and we could drink some scotch.
She's like, I'm out
of here. Okay, my favorite scene, one of my favorite scenes in this movie is when she walks in on him taking a bath. And
see, there's just lots of good moments.
Yeah. Yeah, but
it doesn't add up to a good movie, but at least it has these moments.
I feel like they're all good moments because of Cary Grant's character being so cool.
Elwes.
Oh, did I say Grant?
Yeah, but
he might as well be full
Grant. And if anything, this movie is a demo reel where you're watching Princess Bride and it's like, I wonder what Cary Elwes is up to these days. You go here, it's like, oh, it's too bad that he's doing this. But I'm glad he's still good at what he does.
He was recently in Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he's killing it.
He's
in
doing
the
great stuff.
He just has some shitty movies sometimes. But it's not his fault.
That was my least favorite thing about working on Stranger Things
you
was that his character wasn't
Damn.
There. And so I was just like, oh, my one chance.
but if Carrie is listening, it's like, we love you.
No, yes, for sure. Now why is it that we always find Americans abroad? It's rather than the other way around, because very infrequently is it like somebody from, you know, Europe or somebody from Japan or somebody right. from like India goes to America. Like it's usually like at that point in time, a serious drama like story.
Well, have you written like a straight up romance story as a script? Like just like that's the main point of the story?
Not a straight romance.
Because like when I'm writing romance, I tend to write the like effect, like the love
the object of affection,
but the person who is being fallen in love with is just kind of like me being like, well, who would I fall in love with? And that's why Rachel explained when we made Emily, she's like, oh, I just played it as if I was playing as Sarah. Mm-hmm. Just like, because I knew that's what you wrote in the first
place. You're basically
place.
Hitchcock, yeah. is what you're saying.
And so like, I feel like with Richard Curtis, it's the same thing where he's just got a thing for American girls.
Mm.
And it's just
yeah,
kind of
totally.
Like, he writes what he wants to fall in love with.
And it, like when you have something like this, it's an automatic fish out of water,
yeah.
right? And so, you know, they're going to be learning new things. They're going to grate against like whatever the society is that they're stepping into. But how cool would it be if at one point in time we got an interesting American who was just like a normal person, but was like had something to bring to somewhere else besides their determination? Because I feel like that's what we have. We always have like this person who headbutts their way through a problem, and that's what makes them most American, or at least in the last two that we've watched.
Right, and then you've got literally an American in Paris, where Gene Kelly is an American in Paris,
mm-hmm.
and he just is
charming.
He's a leftover. He's an expat, so he went there for the war, and he just never went home. And
uh-huh.
but he's just kind of like determined to have an artistic career in France.
Uh-huh.
Like that's his like main quality, and that's what drives everything he does is his determination.
And I like when when there's an American abroad who is like fascinated with a culture as well, because in fucking Falling in Love, she's almost just like, this place is gross and I'm wearing my boots and blah, blah, blah.
I can't believe I have to walk on dirt.
But when you have somebody like Owen Wilson in Midnight in Paris,
right?
Just thinking about that, he loves it.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm kind of a nerd, and yeah, I'm American and I'm not as sophisticated as some of you French people, but I love this and I dig it and I'm like soaking in culture.
Yeah.
And I like seeing that more so. And there's something about Julia Roberts' character that I think is the pinnacle of being in between those two places, where she's not like gushing about the culture, but she's also not like grating against it, where she just kind of slips in like, I can be undercover here, even though I'm super, super famous.
Yeah. And what's interesting is, I mean, most of the ones that we've brought up are just one filmmaker, but Britain is portrayed as good old home. And it's not this like...
Because there's English speakers.
Yeah. But like Notting Hill, he's very much portraying this single neighborhood in London. He's just saying, I'm just going to talk about this one place, and you can understand why Anna Scott would want to hang out there, because it's like, this is a charming little place. And Richard Curtis is like, I know, like, that's why I'm making a movie about it. And if we did that for Portland, we wouldn't be like, ah, Oregon. We would find our little sliver that we want to talk about and be like we would just talk about like Mount Hood. Just come to Mount Hood, it's great there.
And but in this movie, like in Falling in Love, you have like, when she gets to the place, you have of Scotland, she's like driving through the countryside, and there's castles everywhere, and it's just green for miles, which that is what a lot of Scotland does look like.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why the thing I think is weirder than even like Netflix is being like, go environmental, which is like, I get that that's top down and stuff, and but that's something I can like be on board with and mm-hmm. be like, okay, yeah, this aligns with my values. But
it still feels like a product placement.
It does, but like, they're not really placing a product, they're placing a mindset.
Yeah, but it's still like product integration, where it's like, I only drink Snapple.
Yeah, but it's not, you have to admit, it's not that corporate.
No.
But what feels weird to me, especially as an American, is watching these movies and them being like, hey, Americans, this place that you've romanticized forever, it's just as romantic as you think.
Mm-hmm.
You just wait. You come here and you hobbits? Yeah. They're in New Zealand. Feel it, baby.
But I feel like that is...
A haka? It's going to be happening on the street.
I do think that is the point of...
They fucking sing, I take the high road and you
but
take the low.
That which makes narrative sense, because she's singing it at him, and that's the only one she's going to know. She's not going to know any other lilts to sing.
Well, yeah, but she doesn't start them singing it. It's
band
decides to play that.
Sure, but
at
she
their
can sing along,
pub.
And it's stupid and it's cheesy, but for a shitty Netflix movie, I buy it. Like, the suspension of disbelief hits. I'm just like, yeah. And I think that's the reason why a lot of people come to these movies, is they're like, romance set in a castle? Fucking sign me up. Like, that's all they want. Just give me a castle. Give me a romance. I'm satisfied.
I hear you. It definitely sounds like you're saying Netflix, TV for idiots.
I mean, just a little. Okay. But I think people watching it are like, I don't want a complicated movie like Notting Hill. I don't want to think too hard.
It's not that complicated. It's not like we're watching Inception or like, I don't know, I'm like Fellini or something. I'm just mm-hmm. looking at your shelf. You know, it's not complicated to
but
make,
that's the only
make
thing
a romance.
I know, but that's the only thing I'll go to bat for. It's like, for the most part, like I said, I was fine with the story. And like, if you just tried a little bit harder, I would have come back to it and enjoyed it more.
I think I'm kind of in the same camp. I think it's bad, but I think if you would have put a little bit more effort into this would have been a movie I came back and watched.
Well, also it's an appropriate movie for young people, like 11-year-olds. Like, this is a movie that you could watch with a tween, like intentionally watch with a tween.
I wouldn't because I don't want to poison them.
Right, but you can't watch Four Weddings and a Funeral with a tween. Or at least I'm not going to watch it with a tween. It's just going to be a little inappropriate. You could, but it's not going to be as fun for them.
I guess. I watched Notting Hill when I was about 11.
Oh, wow. that would have been way, not over my head, but I would have been really bored by it. I'm like, why am I watching this? I should be watching The Phantom Menace.
Well, yeah, but I mean, we've kind of pre-established that you weren't into romantic things.
Sure, but
back
I'm
then.
Saying the average tween age people in the world.
This would be so boring to me as a tween. I would have hated this movie as a tween.
Okay. You are an enlightened special boy.
I think you would have too. Like, there's nothing interesting happening.
I know. Yeah. I'm just imagining Sarah, who, like, her favorite movie as a child was You've Got Mail. And this is just a TV movie. It's never going to overtake You've Got Mail. But it's a Friday night. She's having a sleepover with her friends. This is a fine movie to just throw on, or should have been. And I think that's the intention of the filmmakers for this film, is to have something that's appropriate for all ages, which really homogenizes it and really just makes it more bland. Yeah. But I don't know. That's why American cheese tastes that way.
And maybe that's the thing, like, that grates even more against me when we have these characters like the ones in Falling in Love. And I mean, in The Christmas Prince, like, we have all of these Americans that go to these foreign places and just seem so basic and uninteresting as humans, mm-hmm. as characters. There's just nothing going on with them that I'm like, you are unique because of X. And it feels like that's what Netflix thinks about everyone in America. And it feels dumb.
I think I got it. I think you're saying, like, when I go to Scotland, I want to go to, like, an authentic place in Scotland to enjoy it. And Netflix is like, well, we're going to take you to the heart of this downtown place, and we're only going to take you to the corporate stores, and you're not going to actually go visit small businesses. We're just going to show you, like, the it's a small world version of it, so that you're not actually getting the real thing.
I don't mind the world that we're going into.
But you're not getting anything authentic.
I feel what I'm not getting anything authentic from is our characters.
Yeah.
Like but like the castle and like the small town, I'm fine with that. Like that's a small place with a couple of pleasant characters for a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. But it's like you have a layover in England, you go and get bangers and mash, and it's like, yeah, I visited England. It's like, did you? like you had this very generic experience that doesn't make it, like, genuine. It doesn't make it character. So, sure.
Well, you know, speaking of genuine experiences, Ryan, if you were forced at sword point by Cary Elwes,
no, to the pain,
to give this movie a rom-com Oscar, would you?
I would have to. Everyone gets one, and
everybody gets one.
I mean, you're going to hate me because I'm going to take the only good one. Best production design.
Oh, it was a good production design.
Yeah. Yeah.
I liked it a lot.
Great.
And the sweaters were amazing.
And it was, the castle is dressed correctly.
Uh-huh.
Like they're
those baked goods looked so good.
But like, remember in Fall in Love where she's like looking at the kitchen, she's like, oh, this is terrible. And Sarah's like, I would take that kitchen, I would just clean it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's nothing wrong with this kitchen. But, like, he takes her to the dingy room that she's going to sleep in. It's like, yeah, that looks like shit. That looks, like, really cold and horrendous. And so they did a much better job.
I mean, it looks cold. It looked like it would take maybe 2 days to make look wonderful.
Right, but it's just, like, it's far more evocative this time around. So
sure.
They did a good job.
I'm going to give this movie Best Shining Star. Best Christmas Star. Because I think that really what saves this movie from my complete derision is Cary Elwes. And when you have an actor who can do that and seemingly had a good time doing it, there was something about his performance that made me think, like, you're doing this for a paycheck, but I think you're putting your heart and soul into it, mm-hmm. in a way you don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
And it made my respect for him, which already exists in a pretty high plane, go even higher. So, mm-hmm. Best Shining Star.
Yeah. Because for me, having him around, I don't mind if I had to be at like a relative's house and you've explained this, that sometimes just Hallmark movies are on. And so it's like, some are more tolerable than others.
Sure.
This is far more tolerable, where it's like, I'm not going to watch, but I'm going to be on my phone the whole time. But I don't mind it being here. Whereas other shitty Hallmark or Netflix movies, I'm like, I'm going to take off.
Sure. Like, sure, sure, sure.
I can't be around this. It's too painful.
Yeah, yeah. I gotcha.
But Cary Elwes, shining star indeed.
Ask me the question, because I got a good answer for you right now. Surprising answer.
Tell me, who would you fall in love with?
Are there any circumstances in which the two of you might be more than just good friends?
The truth of it is, I've loved you from the first second I met you.
But mostly I hate the way I don't hate you. Not even close. Not even a little bit. Not even at all.
You have bewitched me, body and soul, and I love, and love, and love you. I know.
Carrie Elwes. I mean, come on.
Can we both say Carrie Elwes?
Yeah, of course we can.
Yeah, Carrie Elwes.
He's a duke that treats his subjects well. He has a dog and a cool like partner that helps him take care of the place. He's handy. He's smoldering. He plants two trees when he takes ones up, and he can ride a horse. When he was downstairs and he threw a snowball at her in the window, I was like, come on, say it. Say, I found these horses. Hello, pretty lady.
But he didn't. Runner up goes to the cute baker girl.
Me? Yeah. High five.
She's very cute. Across the way.
She was real close.
But I was just like,
like a Richard Curtis movie, all of these characters could have just been
really
like
been
really
out.
Cool characters. And I want to see her act more because I thought she was good.
Yeah. So what can you do?
I thought her, Angus, and the lady who ran the inn were all fine.
They were, I would say, on the curve. They're better than average.
I think they're all good actors was the thing. Like, yeah. They got cast in this Netflix movie because they're Scottish, and it's like, yeah, but you're all good. You're better than Brooke Shields.
But they're all, like, I just like this, like, kind of pan, too. They're all just kind of knitting there, and it's like, that's kind of an amusing shot.
Yeah, it
is. I like the look of it, so. And it just made, I don't know, it made more sense as compared to other ensembles from these shitty movies where it's like, why are these people here? It's like, well, they're
it's the only local place to gather, and they're all knitters.
Nothing else to do in this little town, and they're all neighbors. And
now I did notice that Angus he didn't speak until the end, but he did sing, which I thought might have been a really interesting thing had they cared more about these characters in this movie.
Like, no one reacted to him singing.
Yeah, it should have been Brooke Shields, like, turning and looking at him, and then, like, the old lady, like, sidling up to her. And this is where I'm rewriting the movie.
You write your first draft with your heart, and you rewrite with your head.
The old lady sidles up to Brooke Shields, and she's like, this is the only way we can get him to talk is if we sing. And then at the end, Brooke Shields could have, like, started, like, found out, like, his favorite song was X, or his ex's favorite song was X, and started singing it and got him to sing along. Aww. And that could have been, like, also what broke him into, like, not broke him, but, you know, allowed him to, like, come back out vocally.
I would have taken any rewrite to this movie. And there's, like, the understanding of, like, well, you don't want to make it too complicated because, again, we're trying to keep it a very simple, you know, all-inclusive thing.
Yeah, but what
thing.
Complicates things?
That's the point, is, like, I don't need you to make it Notting Hill level of, like, character development.
Just a smidge.
We're just telling the filmmakers at Netflix, and I really think it's the executives who are ruining these movies.
Because
I can see, like, the production design was good. They cast correctly.
Yeah.
At least with Carrie Elwes and the side characters. It's like, someone knew what they were doing, but it feels like someone, like, ruined it at the same time, where they were just, like, making these dumb editing decisions.
Yeah. So the director of this movie, the most notable thing that she's directed other than this is Pet Sematary.
Mm.
And everything else has been, like, kind of TV, but not good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's really odd to me that this is a movie that this person, looking at her other credits, would choose to direct.
Right.
So the whole thing feels like executive born paycheck land.
Like, here's the thing.
Also, this is made by the American Corporation of Movies, or the
some generic thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like Motion Picture Company of America.
It says corporation in the title of the thing. And so it's like from moment one, it feels manufactured.
Yeah, and I think from what I looked at, the acting's kind of bad throughout. Even when it's Carrie Elwes, it's like, I know he has better takes than him.
Yeah,
but
sure.
It feels like Netflix is cheaping out and not giving them time.
Yeah,
which is why it would make sense that they would hire a director who's mostly done television, so they can just go.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder if Netflix came to you and like, hey, here's a script. It's called A Castle for Christmas. We've got Cary Elwes. And you'd be like, I'm in.
Robin asked me the same question.
But you would put up with so much bullshit from Netflix where they wouldn't give you the time to do it right. They wouldn't let you do rewrites. They wouldn't let you be in the editor's room. They would just lock you out and just be like, we just want a yeah. product. Just give it.
You really can't lay like blame. I feel like now that we've gotten here watching Netflix movies, I don't think when there is a failure at Netflix, I don't think you can lay the blame on anybody's doorstep except the executives for the most part.
Just Netflix. And this is our message to Netflix. Do better.
Do better.
We deserve better.
Like Ryan and I, one of the hard things about being young filmmakers who have written a lot, we've written quite a few scripts at this point in time. And every single one of them is, I don't mean to toot our own horn. This sounds like we are. They're better than this, but at the same time, I don't know what would happen if we brought one of those scripts to Netflix and like it got chopped up as much as this seemingly has been.
Yeah, and that's why we're not like saying, oh, these filmmakers are garbage. No, we could have done a better job.
No, not
it's
at
like,
all.
No, we understand, and we're not asking you to be Citizen Kane.
No.
We're just asking you to be a little better, and it's Netflix's fault for not investing properly of giving the shoot times so they can do more than one take.
And we don't know this for sure, but that's just what it feels like.
That's our assessment.
Yeah.
So it's, you guys are fine. We love you. It's not your fault, but Netflix, come on.
Hey, Flo.
Huh?
Mail come. Got mail for you.
Oh, Pete, you've got mail.
You sent me a letter.
You've got mail. Ho, ho, ho.
Doot, doot. Oh, no.
Ho, ho, ho.
Oh, no. Ow.
That was the train, man.
He's already gone.
Yeah, but he threw
Was he wearing a Santa hat?
He threw this present. It smells of a Jell-O mold.
Open it.
Oh, yes.
It wiggles.
It is Jell-O mold, but inside is your essay. Hold on, I'm going.
Stick your finger in. Nice. Looks delicious.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah, it is your essay. Oh, this is good. This, folks, if you want to go over to patreon.com/romcomgens right now, you can read this essay, which is a guest essay. It's not even written by you.
No, I didn't write it.
No. It's written by Paris Geller from the Gilmore Girls.
Mm-hmm.
And she is, she's written top or worst 5 rom-coms of all time.
Yep. Paris.
There's some really good rom-coms on this list.
I thought they were good, but we went to Paris and we said, write whatever you want to write about. And she decided
to say
5 worst rom-coms. And so if you want to see which rom-coms she chose and her reasoning behind those choices.
One of them is Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah. You don't have to read the rest to figure out why.
The other stuff that you can find on patreon.com/romcomgents, which is our Patreon, if you haven't figured that out, is nothing else by Paris Geller, but you can you can see our Gilmore Girl or listen to our Gilmore Girls reviews, which are our monthly bonus episodes. We've done the first 2 seasons, but we've also done myriad other movies. We've done, or this month we're doing Die Hard.
Die Hard!
Die Hard!
We also have a bonus, not a bonus episode, just a movie poll that you get to pick our movie. Because you're patrons and you have the power.
You have the power.
So it's Christmas in December. Crazy. It's a Christmas to remember in December.
Wait, hold on. That's got to be a Christmas in December. We should just write it. We should write it, send it to them. They'll make it. We'll make some money. Finally.
You know, they should make an Airplane style, like we've talked about, They Came Together, but they should do a parody movie of and call it A Christmas in December.
Oh my God. It would be
a parody of every Hallmark movie.
A December for Christmas.
I think every diehard Hallmark fan would be like, that needs to happen.
Oh,
like
yeah,
they know
for sure.
They know how tropey these movies are. And that's part of the fun.
I think they'd be on board.
Yeah. So the poll for A Christmas in December is A Christmas Prince, Holiday, The Best Man Holiday, and The Preacher's Wife. Now,
2 of those Netflix are Netflix rom-coms, and 2 are rom-coms that existed prior.
So far, Holiday is winning.
By a wide margin?
Just by a slim margin. Okay. So help us not watch that movie.
Please. Please, God.
Or just make us the experts on shitty Netflix rom-coms.
Sure.
And we will really get an assessment. And I just want to build out the curve more.
Because me too.
At the top of the curve is still Set It Up.
We've really, for Netflix rom-coms / Netflix Christmas rom-coms, you and I have only watched this one.
And A Christmas Prince.
And A Christmas Prince, which we didn't watch for the podcast, but we might.
We might.
Well, that's wonderful. Did we get any other letters this week?
No other letters other than just well wishes and a hooray from all of the... I just want to say thank you to followers on Instagram.
Yeah, we've got a good community building up there.
Very beautiful people. Thank you for following and being engaged. It makes me happy.
Next week, we have a very special guest.
Mm-hmm. We've got Carrie Francis, Broadway person lady. And
I think we call them actors.
Yeah. She was also in Knives Out. She's got a new Christmas single out, and I don't know if I can play a snippet. I'm going to ask her if I can play a snippet. But
if we can, it's going here. If we can't, I'll say, oh, shucks.
But go on to, she should be on all the platforms, iTunes, Spotify, CD, vinyl, audio cassette, 8-track.
8-track. Big into 8-track.
She's going to be our guest, and I put it up to her. I'm like, what do you want to watch? And she's like, Holiday Inn. We're going to do Holiday Inn.
We
like,
are
sweet.
Doing
Let's do Holiday Inn.
Holiday Inn. So that's going to be a real, like, basically polar opposite of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Set in the 1940s, I believe.
Made in and set in the 1940s.
And it's, you know, Bing Crosby, Fred Astaire. Fred Astaire does a great drunk dance. You know, fair warning, it's an old movie.
Content warning.
Content warning. There is a little bit of blackface in this movie. We'll
be
talking
about it.
We're
going to
talk about it. But it's also probably heartwarming. It's been a while since I've watched it.
Yeah.
Somebody says Connecticut in it. I'm really excited for that.
Yeah. I'm excited for next week because we get to... Carrie's been on a bunch of other podcasts I've been listening to, and they always grill her about Knives Out, and I'm like... Is she going to get tired of talking about her experience on Knives Out? But it's really interesting. And I think you, our audience, will be really interested to hear some of her stories because it's really cool.
Do you want to maybe send her an email beforehand and be like, hey, do you want to talk Knives Out? Or
no, she's going
not?
To. We're
going
to make her. It's happening. I mean, she has to answer all of our questions.
Let's make sure she has a good time.
She'll have a good time.
A
not
fine
a great time.
Time. She'll have,
it'll be
she'll
a,
have
good
a castle
time.
For Christmas kind of time.
She'll have like a December for Christmas kind of time.
Whoops. This is Kelly and Baby Elowen from the future because she's in the room. Carrie and us are actually doing that the next week. So next week we'll actually be watching that Christmas classic, that ensemble piece of all ensemble pieces. Love Actually does work. Love's all around. All right, back to we're gonna end soon.
Ryan, I love you so much more than this movie we watched. Yes.
I love you as much as I love Carrie Elwes.
Oh, wow. That's don't lie to me.
As you wish.
And this is where we will say goodbye.
Ryan and Kelly must bid you adieu. Thank you for listening to our review. Rate and subscribe, we'll even take a bribe. See you next week on A Gentleman's Guide to Rom-Coms.